Hi, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to Revolution Radio on Tuesday night at 8 p.m. This is the IDEVX Report.
Good evening, everyone. This is Daryl About Chickens and Ryan Powers and Christian Perez for another fun-filled and exciting episode of the IDEVX Report. And we are very happy to be here. Although, I'll be honest with you, I'd rather have been out and about today and over the past couple of days because, once again, a lot of nonsense has just started blowing up. So,
what kind of nonsense, Daryl?
A lot of stuff that's happening in, once again, Minnesota. I mean, bad enough we have to, it was something that I remember somebody said on MSNBC that we will probably have another shooting while the Derek Chauvin trial was happening in Minneapolis, and sure enough
yeah, it's back to normal.
And what makes it so bad is that we also had to deal with an Army lieutenant getting pepper sprayed, and he wasn't, and all he did was just not pull over correctly, and they're drawing guns. So here we are again.
They said the guy, you know, they get behind the guy, they're pulling him over for whatever reason they want to pull him over, and he pulled forward into a well-lit gas station where they couldn't beat him to death in the dead of night and leave him on the side of the road, and they got pissed off, and so they did what they did. And then they turned off their cameras midway through, apparently.
He said, I feel uneasy because of what happened. Like, they had the gun, they pulled the guns on him before they even got a chance.
And this is going to segue a little.
I felt bad for the guy. The guy, as they were doing it, the guy's going, this is fucked up. You can hear the pain in his voice. And I remember getting put in cuffs, you know, like for no reason. It's a horrible, humiliating feeling. And, you know, for anybody, but when you know that race is a motivating factor, which it clearly is in, you know, almost all these cases that we hear about, you know, it just compounds it. It's fucked up.
And no,
said it right while you're getting right. This is fucked up.
Yeah, and by the way, it does not matter that the arresting officer was himself Hispanic, because, interestingly enough, fascism calls it all colors. So, yeah.
I want to speak on that. I mean, I think a lot of people they assume that American fascism is going to be white supremacist. Now, it is. Right. But it's not necessarily going to manifest as explicitly white supremacist. The United States in the 21st century is not Germany in the 1930s. So people assume that fascism, if it ever comes to the United States, is going to look like it did in Germany, or exactly like it did in Germany. And that's the case. I mean, anti-blackness runs rampant in a lot of different communities.
Well, that's the funny thing about all of that is the fact that I guess they're trying to, a lot of that anticipation of it looking like Nazi Germany is coming from people who are basically trying to propagandize. They don't want you to notice, and they don't want you to recognize that's what they're doing and that's what they're about. So they tell you that, you know, it has to be just like, it has to be just like Nazi Germany for it to be Nazi, you know?
Exactly. Yep. Excellent point.
And you don't need to look like Nazi Germany. I mean, there's a whole bunch of people of color who act like they're from Nazi Germany. So, So we have to take that to heart. Segueing a little bit into the current to our topic for today, it's interesting how we are talking about Giuliani, and we have to talk about the son of his former police chief. I believe he was the commissioner under. Did he get appointed by Giuliani? Ray Kelly?
That I don't know. I'm not sure.
No,
sorry.
No, in 92, Dinkins appointed Kelly as the police commissioner.
Okay,
and then I guess Giuliani replaced him with William Bratton. And I think he came back under Mayor Bloomberg. It came back under Mayor Bloomberg. But it's interesting because Greg Kelly is on a tear. Greg Kelly is Ray Kelly's son. And he's over at Newsmax right now. Oh. And when you're at Newsmax, that means you're a shit talker on the right. That's just basically what it means. Yeah. But he's on Twitter and he's talking out of his ass. He's over there wondering why, for example, he's going after the lieutenant saying that he should be fired. He should be kicked out of the military because of how he acted. And people are beating his ass over that. And then he decides to go after people who have named the police officer that killed Dante Wright. Kim Porter, I believe her name is. By the way, is a police union boss, and police union bosses give away the store all the time. So this is kind of like poetic justice because it's. In many respects, you're talking about the police union bosses talk the most trash about community that they represent. So this is going to be really interesting to see what happens with her. That's why, incidentally, why they were holding the press conference about all of this, that Blue Lives Matter flag went up the flagpole at the police station in that town. So a town, by the way, Brooklyn, what's the name of the town? Brooklyn something.
Was it Brooklyn Center?
Brooklyn Center. That town was founded by a Klansman. It's also ironic that they have a black mayor, but that town was founded by a Klansman back in 1911.
It's always something. It's always something when you dig deeper. I mean, this woman was on the force for 26 years, they said. I mean, they got her on film shooting that guy, and I don't know. They say the police are not trained to look at the weapon. They're trained to look at the individual, but someone's dead. So after 26 years, figure it out. Like, I don't know what to say. Like, people got to stop getting shot by cops.
I got to give credit to Sharpton. Basically said there was no excuse for none of these people getting in trouble. The only reason, Trevor Noah said it on The Daily Show, Al Sharpton said it today. The only reason why they keep doing this is because they keep getting away with it.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what the scenario. You can sit there and talk about how bad a person Dante Wright is or was. Fact of the matter is, and they did the same thing with George Floyd. The fact of the matter is they had trials for that. Trials you denied him. And it's still a matter of the fact that former Officer Porter had did a lot of things wrong herself, and she needs to be held accountable for it. Just like every cop that does something wrong, but doesn't.
I got a two-part question for you, Daryl. Number one is, do you think Derek Chauvin will be found guilty? Right. And number two is, let's say he is found guilty. Do you see police accountability going up, or do you see murders, continuing? Because I want to hear what you have to say, and then I'll give my hypothesis, but go ahead.
Well, Brian, me and you talked about this last week, correct?
A little bit, yeah. And
fill me in.
Well, basically, I say, you know, it can go either way. It can really go either way. I can see it coming up with a verdict of guilty. I can see that happening. I can also see him not serving a lot of time. I mean, anything's possible. Police don't get in trouble, so anything is possible.
Yeah.
Do I see that there will be an uptick on police accountability in the future? Remains to be seen too. Depends on how much we're going to put in.
Yeah.
Do we know anything about the sentencing phase? And let's just say, you know, we all seeing the trial, seeing the defense, everybody feels confident and guilty verdict. I'm not a 1,000,000% confident, and nor should anybody be in this country. But let's just say, for shits and giggles, he gets guilty of something. What is the sentencing phase like? And does anybody know, like, is this judge going to pass sentence? Is there a recommended sentence from the jury? I'm unsure about
that. I believe the jury is the ones that do that. We can look that up while we're on the, while we're looking at some other stuff in a bit. But I think all of this leads to our topic of discussion today. Oh boy. Because one of the reasons why we keep having this problem is because it isn't even so much about the police at this point. It's really about those that use bad cops to go after people, communities that they despise and they want eliminated. We have a bigger problem with the right in this country. And the right has always demonized people of color as a criminal class. And it has always been really their bread and butter. And I could tell you right now, living in the suburbs of New Jersey, I didn't see it a lot, or at least I didn't recognize it a lot. But I knew it was there. And I damn sure saw it as I got older. And I started going around and I started venturing out into various parts of the country and the state even. Like today is the 13th of April. April 9th, 1994, I caught my first arrest. And that led to my first column. That tells you how much fun that shit was. And I was going to see a friend of mine, and she was in Kingsburg, New Jersey. And Kingsburg? Yes.
Oh, Kingsburg.
Yeah, Kingsburg can be a very redneck town. I went to use a payphone that was inside a deli. I tried to open up the door. They closed the door on me and locked it. Next thing you know, cops come out of nowhere.
Was this like during the day?
This was at night. The cops came out of nowhere, started asking me questions like, why am I here? Who did you come to see? Is she white? Apparently, the story is that I was chasing a white woman through the neighborhood.
What?
So I got arrested.
Was this 1947? When the fuck? I mean,
1994. You ain't that old, man.
And that's what I think.
2019, Kingsburg, New Jersey, right?
1994. It could be 2019, but it was 94.
See, people think this shit is that far in the past. This is not that. This same generation, man. Crazy. Fucking crazy.
I remember when I wrote the column. In the column, it says, I write that, God help. Can you imagine what would have happened if if whoever made that call was armed and felt the need to defend themselves, quote unquote?
Yeah.
I mean, and that was a couple of years. That was a couple of years before. And that was a couple of years before Trayvon Martin was born.
Oh,
yeah.
And Ahmaud Arbery, for that matter. So it was kind of like, I actually have I discussed the, I discussed the case with on radio with somebody, with a talk show host by the name of Lynn Samuels. She's no longer with us. She was on 77 WABC, which also gave rise to Rush Limbaugh and all that. But she was one of the liberals.
Most annoying voice in the face of the earth.
Yeah, she was.
And that's why they put her on. The station deliberately put on an annoying sounding liberal to make them sound stupid.
But she was good people as far
she
as
she was a very nice person, but they were using
I mean, she was nice. I met her at the Rio Diner in Woodbridge.
Yeah. For those that don't know, New Jersey is the diner capital of the universe.
Yeah.
For people that don't know.
Everything happens in a diner.
So if you go on, but if you go on YouTube if you go on YouTube, I'm not sure if it's on my channel or on OPP's channel or what. But if you go on YouTube, you can find me talking about this particular case. But anyway, those charges got dismissed eventually. So
thank God.
So you were going to use the payphone at a deli and they locked the doors and called the cops on you. And then the cops said there was a black man, you chasing white women around the neighborhood.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So common.
Reason why I got dismissed because no white women seemed to show up.
Yeah, like who are these white women getting chased?
What exactly happens when you chase a white woman around town? Do you literally like? Do they picture a black man running around the streets after white women? I mean, what exactly are they fucking talking?
Yeah,
about?
It must have been
story of my life.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, that's crazy, man. I'm sorry you went through that, bro.
But see, that's my experiences. That's the kind of experience. I mean, besides working in New York during Giuliani's time, I was working during Dinkins' time, and you still had, because I was working over at the Tower Records. I remember we would go back and forth. I would go back and forth from Newark. I was living in Newark, New Jersey, and I was working over at Tower Records in the Village. And I remember me and my boy Ricardo were just knocked out. Me and my boy Ricardo and Khalid, we were just Khalid, and we were just knocked out. We were tired as hell. Cops come into the subway car, pulling me, all of us out, including one other person, and searched us, saying that they were looking for somebody. That somebody was a light skinned woman with a pink jumpsuit on. I can assure you, I wasn't wearing that.
Yeah, nor are you a light skinned woman.
So I mean, that's the kind of thing that we were dealing with, and you know, the New York Post wasn't helping Matt as much because I mean, you know, Rupert Murdoch, the guy who gave us Fox News, was basically using the tough on crime thing to just go after black people. That and anti-Semitism. That every time we criticize somebody on the right, they called us anti-Semitic. Man. You know. But the whole thing was they just basically tried to make black and brown people criminals, and that's how we got Rudolph Giuliani.
Well, that's- actually, I had a stat because I wanted to let people know that in New York there was, and this is well after Giuliani's time, but this is indicative to show that culture doesn't change, because we could talk about like Richard Pryor in the 1970s making jokes about police brutality that are relevant today, right? But ProPublica report between 2010 and 2012 and found that young black men are 21 times more likely than white men to be killed by police.
And that's not even surprising.
It's not surprising.
But what is the big deal is the propaganda that comes from the right in regards to it. They basically use that to marginalize us and prevent us from getting into power. Well, you're getting into any positions of power. And that's what I mean by it brought us Giuliani, because here's what happened. Once upon a time, it was 1989. And Ed Koch was on his way to becoming, getting another term as mayor. He was a very popular mayor, even though he didn't do shit for crime either. But he pissed off a lot of black people, so he was good to go. But what happened in August of 1989 flipped the script on him. Bensonhurst. Mm. For those who don't know, there was a little bit of an issue in the neighborhood of Bensonhurst, which at the time was a very Italian neighborhood. And the local boy, some of the local boys were having, were pissed off because one of the girls in the neighborhood was dating a black guy. So they figured that they would find this black dude and beat him down with baseball bats and all that. Well, Yusuf Hawkins and his friends came into the neighborhood. I forgot which town they were coming from, what community they were coming from, but they were not from Bensonhurst. They came into town because they simply wanted to buy a car. They heard about a car that they could buy in Bensonhurst, so they went out to check it out. Well, this mob sees them and think it's time to attack. They attack everybody, and then Joey Fama, one of the guys in the mob, shoots Yusuf Hawkins dead at 16. That pissed everybody off. That set everybody on fire. And all of a sudden, people were coming out to Bensonhurst protesting and saying, we will not tolerate this. What do the folks in Bensonhurst do? And Al Sharpton was leading these marches at the time. They're yelling racial slurs at everybody. They're swinging around watermelons. I got video of this somewhere around here. And it was just a completely nasty situation. And it also made it so bad for Ed Koch was that David Dinkins, the Manhattan Borough president at the time, was running for mayor. And everybody started looking away from Koch, who wasn't doing a damn thing about all this. As a matter of fact, was being blamed for a lot of this. and started looking, you know what, maybe we need a black mayor. And to that end, Ed Koch lost the primary. And no one expected that. No one expected that. But that also meant that if the whoever lost the primary would go on to win the election, the general election, because Republicans don't have a foothold in New York City. Until Rudolph Giuliani, until everybody freaked out over the fact that a black man was about to become mayor of New York, and then they started bigging up Giuliani. Now, let me tell you what the deal was when it came to Giuliani. Giuliani was at the time a appointee. He was appointed to the Associate Deputy Attorney General. He served as the Associate Deputy Attorney General, appointed by Ronald Reagan. And he was well known for basically, well, they basically said that he did some damage to the mob. So that
He went after the mob and some Wall Street execs.
He went after a rival mob is what he did.
That's how my father would put it.
There's a few different mobs, just so people don't know. New York is run basically by a few mobster families. And just because you go after and get some mobsters usually means you're part of a different mob. That's all that means.
This is about the time he jumped to the Republican Party, too, because he was a Democrat as a young man.
Actually, he was an independent. He was a Democrat until about 1975, and then he became a became independent between 75 and 80, and then became a Republican in 1980. So here comes 1989. He becomes a Reagan appointee. So yeah, that's how this works. Now, curiously, his critics, to your point, by the way, basically, Giuliani is responsible. We always talk about perp walks. He's the one that came up with that.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one that had the people coming out and you walk them in front of the cameras and make them look bad. And what critics would say is that he arranged for people to be arrested and then dropped the charges for lack of evidence on high-profile cases before going to trial. In a few cases, I'm reading this from Wikipedia, his arrest of alleged white-collar criminals at their workplaces with charges later dropped or lessened sparked controversy and damaged the reputations of the alleged quote-unquote perps. He claimed veteran stock trader Richard Wigton of Kidder, Peabody & Company was guilty of insider trading. In 87, he had officers handcuff Wigton and march him through the company's trading floor with Wigton in tears. Might have seen that scene. That's what Charlie Sheen was doing in Wall Street. That was one of his last scenes in Wall Street. Giuliani had agents.
It seems like Giuliani was, he's a lifetime opportunist. You know, he goes wherever the grass is greener. And, locking up bosses and a couple, crooked Wall Street people will get you the support you need. And it also makes you look bipartisan when you're somebody like Giuliani, who really wasn't a bipartisan
Listening to what he's doing, what he's doing is not only, kind of cultivating this image of somebody who's tough on crime, which is ridiculous. Again, he's just in a different mob. Who cares, right? But he's also, by doing these perp walks, and like Daryl's pointed out, he's sending a message that I'm top boss. If you cross me, I'll fuck your whole life up. This is what is becoming accepted as politics these days, but these are the tactics of Roman emperors and fascists and dictators worldwide. I mean, we could see it in the Philippines with that fucking lunatic over there. I mean, there's the list goes on of horrible people that use this kind of tactic of parading people and publicly shaming and essentially you may not know the story, right? You may not know why the politics called for Giuliani to shame this guy in front of Wall Street, but it may have been a personal grudge. Maybe he wanted to fuck his wife and he figured that this would cause a divorce and he'd better get a better shot. It's that petty sometimes. But that's what mobsters are. That's what criminals and thugs do. They take their petty little grievances out on society. And these are the tactics. And these are that shit that Caligula did, man. I've been into Roman shit lately. Can you tell? But, this is really a public shaming of political opposition or perceived political opposition. And the net result is you'll have less opposition because of the fear it generates. And any opposition you have is thought to be stupid for opposing you. And so you collect your power.
Well, see, that kind of thing is what got him noticed by everybody who wanted to keep Dinkins out. Because so long as they look at black people as a criminal class, they need a Giuliani type to come in and keep that from happening. So that's how he got uplifted. And from then on, he was basically courting the bigot vote, really. And that's where all of this began. Now, what that meant was a lot of ugliness during the campaign. And especially when you consider, I mean, they was trying to say that Dinkins didn't pay his taxes and all that. It was basically sitting on that one for God knows how long. But Giuliani lost in 1989, and by 2 percentage points, no less. And Dinkins went on to become the mayor, the first black mayor of New York. And that launched a 4-year smear campaign against Dinkins, courtesy of 77 WABC, which Bob Grant and Rush Limbaugh was on at the time, the New York Post. Daily News really didn't help matters much.
And NYPD.
NYPD.
Curtis Sliwa.
Who had a radio show at the time.
Fucking moron. You know what? I will point out before you go, and we will say that all this happened after the crime bill, the 1994 crime bill, under Clinton. Clinton's administration really enabled quite a bit of this.
Well, that was that came into play, but not yet, because by that time, Dinkins was out and Giuliani was mayor.
Yeah.
But what happened was, Dinkins was out as of 93. I wrote something about
the crime bill was 94.
The crime bill was 94. And that's part of the propaganda. That was part of all of that agitation. Yes, indeedy. So he spent the next 4 years courting every bigot in New York City for another shot at the mayoralship. Basically, every time Dinkins said something, the local media would go to Giuliani just to hear him say, "I wouldn't do that if I was mayor." You know,
discrimination.
So, and one of the things that happened is that during Dinkins' tenure, there was a call for a civilian police review board because, you know, the police obviously were out of control, even under Dinkins. I mean, Dinkins tried his best, but the police had powerful backers in the media, in government houses and everything, and especially in the NYPD. So I must preface this by saying that it is particularly curious that Giuliani paid tribute to Dinkins when he died last year, considering that he was part of the reason why Dinkins was so tarnished. But in many respects, when Giuliani got in there, crime did go down under David Dinkins. Like I said, he tried. Giuliani took credit for it. But here's the fun part about this. When it was trying to come up with do the Civilian Police Review Board, the police held a rally in September of 1992. And that is going to be, and I'm not even going to talk about it. Y'all got to see this. So that's going to be the first video we look at right now.
The mayor doesn't know why the morale of the New York City Police Department is so low. He blames it on me. He blames it on you.
Bullshit!
The reason the morale of the police department is so low is one reason.
In the summer of 92, the Civil Liberties Union drafted legislation to create an independent civilian complaint review board. For 30 years in the city of New York, civil rights activists, the African American and Latino community, have been attempting to set up some kind of mechanism that would be independent of the police department, so that when there's a allegation of wrongdoing by the police towards New Yorkers, you would not have the cops investigating the cops. The police decided to hold a rally in City Hall Park. There were reported 10,000 people that the police were able to pull out. And Rudy Giuliani was one of the speakers on the side street.
Some of them out there yesterday who were calling out nigger, for instance, why would the people of our communities have confidence that they have the capacity to handle a tense situation in a minority community? And for Rudy Giuliani to urge them on, as it were.
The police department was at fault in not arresting people. There were officers there, and they should have made arrests. And Giuliani was using that rally to steam up cops who had a different agenda. Part of the agenda would be wages, denunciation of Mayor David Dinkins, a certain amount of racism, and he was, by his physical presence, giving support to that.
Sadly, it worked.
So was that this summer? Was that this summer after the George Floyd protests? All those cops rioting like that? I can't tell if that was 30 years ago, if that day.
Amazing. I can't even tell. If it wasn't for the leaves on the trees, I would have thought it was January 6th.
I was going to say, was it the only thing that let me know it wasn't January 6th were the mustaches and the mullets, because
and they continue to get away with it on January 6th.
It looked like this year.
So he's never been held accountable. He's continued to do it. He wasn't held accountable again in January. See you next year.
No. I have to ask a rhetorical question.
What do we think is going to happen? He's going to stop doing this shit? He ain't going to stop. He's still got a podcast and he's still saying dumb shit.
They got the guy from the ACLU who says you have black Latinos complaining about police brutality. And it's like, I have to ask people, when in history have black people come together en masse to complain about a problem and it not, and been found lying? Right. Where is this great issue of millions of black people just lying about their treat? And that's my problem with this. It's inherently racist because you have black people, you have Latinos, and you have a whole bunch of poor people saying, look, these cops are violent. They're bullies. They're thugs. And people just blow off. I mean, and this is just another sign of American racism. We're just not listening to people because we don't agree with them. And, you know, this is where we're at.
Well, let me tell you what Giuliani did to become mayor. He basically like I said before, he spent the next 4 years courting every bigot in New York City. And one of those characters was a really straight up fascist scumbag by the name of Bob Grant. If you want to talk about where Rush Limbaugh got it, it was this dude. It was this dude. Bob Grant was a radio talk show host from way back. I mean, he goes back years. And the issue that we and the biggest problems that we had with Bob Grant, I'll give you an idea of how bad he was. He used to call, by the way, he used to call Dinkins the washroom attendant. I mean, basically, it was a slur at him. And you still see every time Dinkins comes up, you can still see some of these alt-right knuckleheads use that term to describe Dinkins. But Bob Grant would. It's so bad. I mean, he basically was one of those guys who would call, for example, Martin Luther King a scumbag. He literally has on the air. He once said that he wished that George Halliday, the guy who videotaped the Rodney King beating, quote unquote, gets what's coming to him. And said that Native Americans should be lucky we let them survive. He's allowed white supremacists to leave their contact information over his airwaves. And they're saying who they are. I mean, I got tapes of him talking about just letting the National Alliance just leave their information up, you know. And he even encouraged it. He even encouraged
them. Over free airwaves, right? This is all over the radio. This is ego. This is all before paid subscriptions, correct? This is a man using publicly owned airwaves to spread misinformation and white supremacy. I want people to know that. Like, this is how the radio, we own the radio waves, but we allow these people to infect radio waves with their nonsense.
In New York City, the liberal bastion where all the liberal elites get together in New York, the number one media market. Where we're talking about the impact of a talk radio station in New York City. You are speaking to maybe 14 million people in that range. People, this was not public access where some grandma's doing her little thing with a camera. No, this was the largest media market in the country. I mean, the Klan was on the radio, basically. They have a whole station built around racist ideas, 770. And I was infected with that disease when I was younger.
Yeah, and you talk about how liberal New York is. You know what? There's a lot of black people in that city and around in this region that will beg to differ on that. Because one thing I always say, especially when it comes to New York City Democrats, if the one thing they hate more than racism is black people. because they always throw us under the bus. But, Bob Grant was, Ed Koch was a fan of Bob Grant. Despite what he would talk on, said in the video,
he's trying to shape his legacy.
Yeah. So it was kind of like that's the kind of thing that we was dealing with time and time and time and time again. They were supposed to be what New York was supposed to be. No. But here is Rudolph Giuliani looking at all of that, and he's a big fan of Bob Grant himself, and Bob Grant was a big fan of his. He used to promote his mayoral campaigns, both of them, relentlessly. I mean, he was just a regular on Bob Grant's show, and then he won. Ironically, Giuliani won. Giuliani had lost to Dinkins by 2%, and then he won. Then he beat Dinkins by 2%, and everybody was like, "Yeah, we saw this coming. I mean, it's unfortunate." But now this is something we have to deal with. Motherfucker. We knew that he was going to try to pull some crap. One of the things that the Daily News said, incidentally, now remember what I told you beforehand, earlier, is that Dinkins had brought the crime rate down. And I remember the Daily News writing an editorial says that Giuliani wants to keep, because one of the things that Giuliani said during the campaign is that it didn't matter because people didn't feel safe. That was a line from Giuliani on a regular during the campaign. So when the Daily News,
he's been misdirection. That's part of his game.
Exactly. So the Daily News basically said if he thinks he's going to take credit for the crime rate that that David Dinkins brought down, he's going to have a lot of explaining to do. And it turns out he didn't. He did take credit for the crime rate going down. And like I said, he had powerful backers to let him.
Crime went down nationally at that time. And he tried to take credit for all of it, right? Crime went down all over the country. And it was Dinkins. The time changed. It wasn't the 80s anymore.
Well, it was funny because Dinkins kind of led the charge in many respects. It was when Giuliani got in that you started seeing it going on all over the country. I mean, Giuliani did not really have anything to do with what went down. But what he did was make things worse because all of a sudden he decided to do something that no one else was doing, and he should not have. It was basically his approach, and let me see if I want to write this. I want to say this for real. The quality of life stuff. Okay. That was his approach. Basically, what he did was during his first 4 years as mayor, he instituted a number of quality of life initiatives to supposedly combat the drug problem. Now, the initiatives ranged from no public drinking of alcohol to no loitering on the streets, to no bike riding on the sidewalks, to roundups of Washington Heights youth who fit a quote-unquote gang profile.
Black kids.
Yeah, yeah. So the neighborhood police precinct, Washington Heights has three of them within 20 blocks, were told to strictly enforce these laws, and they did. If three or more teenagers walk down the street and fit a gang profile, which largely depends on what kind of clothes the youth were wearing, the cops were stormed against, or wasn't what white people were wearing. as far as they were concerned. The cops would throw him against the wall and perform a search. The teenagers didn't have to do anything wrong, but sometimes a cop would find a stash of drugs, and the kid or kids would become another drug law statistic. So that's what and the whole broken windows thing, this is part of what that was. And it decimated communities. It was not preferable, how should I say. But he didn't care. He did not correspond with those communities. He only cared about the bigots. He was always just about courting those bigots. And people suffered. It was apparently, when I had wrote an article about him in 2000, and he was still mayor at that time, I had written that by that time, over 100 people had been killed due to the police in New York City.
I didn't realize it was that high. I'm actually 100. Shocked at that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's something that I had written.
Low, actually.
Yeah. It does seem low.
You know what? That's how many we know about.
Yeah.
You want to know how many people the New York police have whacked, thrown in a river, and nobody heard from them again? It's probably triple that number.
Yeah, I mean, this is part of the reason.
Who catches you when you're a cop and kills people?
Yeah. The civilians, police, right? Holding them accountable. Right, the police, one institution, organization, group in this country, where if you even raise the mention of, or even raise the question of holding them accountable, you see a meltdown. You see their union leaders, right wing politicians, all come out of the woodwork to try and keep that from happening. Like as if police magic. And I mean, we know police, they're not well educated, right? They don't go long amounts of training. There are police captains on guard saying we like them dumb. We don't want smart police officers, right? Not soldiers. They don't want thinking individuals, not like they have in other countries where you have to go to school for years, like their profession. But this is the one country where you go for a couple of weeks and then you get to be a cop and they give you a gun and fill your head with right-wing propaganda. Now go police some black people.
And needless to say, the New York Post was always a big fan of Dinkins doing all of this because these are the kinds of editorial cartoons you will find in that newspaper. They attacked the Caribbean parade and they figured that they will have some racist crap like this to make their readership smile.
I think he harassed the Puerto Rican Day parade too, which was one of the safer parades in the city.
Yes,
and then there was an incident one year and then he tried to come down on the Puerto Rican Day parade too.
Now, let us not, I'll be remiss in saying that there had been four police officers during Giuliani's tenure that did go to jail for manslaughter. So I will say that. And there were four, and at the time, we also had to deal with the Abner Louima case. Now, that happened during an election year. He was up against Ruth Messenger at the time. And I found the file that I have on Abner Louima. And basically, people know this case best. And let me just tell you, this is Abner Louima for back in the day.
Yeah, I remember that.
But what happened was on the night of August 9th, 1997, police were called. This was in 97, I'm sorry. The police were called and several officers from the 70th precinct were dispatched to the scene where Abner Louima and other men had been involved in a fight between two women at Club Rendezvous, a popular nightclub in East Flatbush, Brooklyn. Police supporters and various people all became involved in the fight outside the club. Police officers Justin Volpe, Charles Schwartz, Thomas Bruder, and Thomas Weiss, and others responded to the scene. In the ongoing altercation, Volpe said that Louima had attacked him. Louima was charged with disorderly conduct, obstructing government administration, and resisting arrest. Later, Volpe admitted his accusation and Louima being his assailant was a lie. Now, on the ride to the station, the arresting officers beat Louima with their fists, nightsticks, and held police radios. They beat him with the police radios. Do you know why they call these freaking things bricks? So they could have killed him. I'm saying they could have killed him. On arriving at the station house, they had Louima strip searched and put in a holding cell. The beating continued later, culminating with Louima being sexually assaulted in a bathroom at the 7th Street station house in Brooklyn. Volpe kicked Louima in the testicles, and while Louima's hands were cuffed behind his back, he first grabbed onto and squeezed his testicles and then forced a broken broomstick up his rectum. According to trial testimony, Volpe walked through the precinct holding the bloody excrement-stained instrument in his hand, bragging to the police sergeant that he, quote, took a man down tonight.
This sounds like what they do to capture runaway slaves.
Yeah, and that's exactly what people had said. And Louima was from Haiti, so he was, so this was being compared to what the Tonton Macoute used to do back in the day.
Yeah.
So everybody was pissed. People were coming out of the woodworks to go after you know, Giuliani over this. Giuliani, however, kept his mouth shut for the most part. Said he was going to take care, but we still came out. We had justice for Abner Louima, and but that's actually the RCP. That's the RCP fly.
All right.
This one came from. This one came from. This is just a regular support rally, for Abner Louima. I got a whole bunch of stuff here. Matter of fact, this is they. One group bastardized the police department logo to show because it was not a broomstick. Yeah, it was originally perceived as a plunger. It was originally perceived as a.
Can we laugh at that? We can't laugh. What are we supposed to do?
While you're looking through that, Daryl, there's another point I want to bring up. So in the year 2000, there was a security guard who was killed by undercover police officers. His name was Patrick Dorismond. I don't know if you remember
that. That came after Louima.
That was in 2000.
And that was the beginning. And really, that was the beginning of the end of Giuliani.
Yeah. Do you know what Giuliani did? He released the guy's juvenile records from 13 years earlier.
That's what got his ass.
He was a security guard.
Laura, I think, is Laura is referring, you know, when you were talking about the slave trade. I mean, that's... Especially in New York, there was, I mean, that was slave catching, like prime grounds. I mean, that's where a lot of slave catchers practiced their trade because that's where a lot of slaves would go. I mean, to try to hide in a highly populated center, you know, or stop on their way to someplace else. So, yeah, Laura points it out. Yeah. I mean, it's
this is us marching across the Brooklyn Bridge. We marched across the Brooklyn Bridge for a little while. Yeah, I have video of Brand Nubian being a part of this at that march. But what was crazy was I came back home from that and found out that after the march, people marched back across the Brooklyn Bridge and police attacked them because, hey, we gave you the one way. You can't do two ways or something nonsense like that. Yeah. So it was So, you know, this, so in the end, unfortunately, Giuliani won that election too. So he beat, with my suggestion because he played it cool. Yeah. But then came, and we're going to go long, I guess, today. We're going to go a little long because we still got more to go. But you go on and you start seeing more and more of an attack on the black community once he had his second term coming in. Now, Giuliani started doing things like going after the Million Youth March. Now, it's a regular, like I said, there's always that anti-Semitism thing that they always try to pin on all of us. But what happened was the Million Youth March, which was 2 years after the Million Man March, was being put together by Dr. Khalid Abdul-Muhammad. Mm. And Giuliani was trying to keep that from happening. He was basically trying to prevent, it was taking place in Harlem, and I was there videotaping the whole thing. And Giuliani basically was trying to throw one roadblock after another in the way of it, but we eventually had the rally. As a matter of fact, I remember one person had a sign that says, "I'm here because Giuliani told me not to come."
Ooh, love it.
Now, the rally was supposed to end at 4 o'clock. Okay. And the police started converging on the stage at this point, converging around the stage, getting ready to start some shit. So Dr. Collett said, if these police put their hands on you, grab anything and beat the hell out of them. He actually did say that. He said, do not let these police officers come for you. Not like this. No. And the end result was at 4:01, the police started attacking and got smacked in the face left and right with police barricades. Don't mess. Yo, when it's time to play, black people will play. And there was pepper spraying and attacking people, and we was attacking back. A police helicopter buzzed the crowd at 200 feet above our heads. 200 feet. So everybody right at this point, now people were already condemning this march because Dr. Collett. I mean, he has a history. He does have a history, and we could talk about that some other time. But when that happened, when that crap went down, all of a sudden everybody was looking at Giuliani going, what the fuck?
Yeah.
You know, but here's the fun part. Then he knew he had to save face. So a couple of weeks later, there was a parade in the Broad Channel section of the city where there were some men in blackface in a pickup truck with another man chained to the rear of it, making fun of the death of, in Jasper, James, Texas, of James Byrd.
James Byrd.
The men in blackface. Yeah. The men in blackface were firefighters. And Giuliani said, oh, I better use this to do something to make myself look better. So he fired him.
Easy.
So he was doing his weekly radio show on ABC at the time. Ironically, on September 11th, 1997, his first caller was a well-known caller named Hal from North Bergen. We later got to know this guy as Hal Turner, who is a well-known neo-Nazi who was famous for threatening to kill people on his radio show, including me. And he was also a contemporary of a libertarian candidate named Murray Sabrin out here in New Jersey. He asked the mayor about what he considered a double standard that the mayor was employing regarding a racial incident, you know, that situation. He said, Giuliani, he said that it was a double standard, that they would be on fire, but nothing happened to anybody in the Million Youth March. And Giuliani said there was a rule prohibiting police and city employees from engaging in hate groups or other activities. And, you know, it didn't work. It didn't work for Giuliani. It didn't work for Turner. So he was already on the hook. And there was still a lot of drama by the time Amadou Diallo was murdered. Now, if you all remember, if you guys saw the promo for this particular show, you would know that it ended with saying that that video, that promo was 41 seconds long. And let me explain where that comes from. On the early hours of February 4th, 1999, Amadou Diallo, who was a street vendor, was standing near his building after returning from a meal. At about 12:40 a.m., officers Edward McMillan, Sean Carroll, Kenneth Boss, and Richard Murphy was looking for an alleged serial rapist in the Soundview section of the Bronx. They police officers stopped his car and interrogated Diallo. Stopped their car and interrogated Diallo, who was in front of his apartment. When they ordered Diallo to show his hands, he supposedly ran into the apartment and reached into his pocket to show his wallet. So the officers opened fire, 41 shots with semi-automatic pistols. They had to reload to get that many shots off. They hit him 19 times. One of those shots actually hit Diallo from the bottom of his feet. which means he was on the ground when they were shooting at him. He was already down. Now, people really got pissed this time. People really got pissed at Giuliani because this was getting out of hand. There was no excuse for that. And I'm going to tell you something. This was the beginning of Giuliani going down and Al Sharpton coming up, because Al Sharpton was smart enough to keep his head about himself and not get caught up in all the nonsense that had been thrown at him for years. And everybody started looking not so much at the police for being the problem, but Giuliani for being the problem. This was happening around the same time we had the racial profiling case where four basketball players were shot in the state of New Jersey. And Whitman was getting in trouble for that and the racial profiling thing that was going on in regards to that. So all, and not only that, the cops that were indicted over Abner Louima, they were now finally going to trial all in this month. All in the month of February. It was just like everything coming together all at once. So here comes Giuliani saying shit like, oh, this will blow over in about 6 weeks. So that was the beginning of that. That was the beginning of the end for that with him. Howard Safer, who was the police commissioner at the time, he blew off a community meeting about this to go to the Oscars. He didn't say he was going to the Oscars, but they saw him in footage. So he ended up resigning, saying that he had prostate cancer or something like that. Giuliani was priming himself for a run for the Senate over Hillary Clinton, and it looked like he was going to get the nomination. But all of this, he came up, and then he decided to bow out because he had prostate cancer.
Yeah.
So, and meanwhile, everybody was looking at Giuliani in a very bad way. In ways that he did not expect to be looked at. But then again, he was already being looked at that way anyway. It's like you take a look at something like this. He was actually excluded from a Martin Luther King Day celebration by the Baptist Ministers Conference.
They had Giuliani?
Yeah, Giuliani back in 1998. Was pissed off because he was kicked out of the King Day celebration. And instead, so Roy Innes of the, and this was at the same time that Roy Innes of the Congress of Racial Equality Corps, this is the right wing civil rights group that everybody.
Say, is this before or after Corps sold that? I was going to say, because you bring up Corps.
Very much like so after.
There was like a turning where they just after. Became a straight up right wing organization.
Remember when I said that Martin Luther King was called a scumbag by Bob Grant? Bob Grant went to their King dinner, their Martin Luther King dinner that year.
Wasn't this the guy that got shoved by Al Sharpton?
That was the guy who shoved Al Sharpton on Martin Downey Jr.'s show.
Okay.
He was also the guy that started the fight on the Geraldo show that got Geraldo's nose broke.
Oh, the white supremacist.
Yeah. Well, no, he was the black dude that. Yeah, that put his hands on
that's Metzger. What this country is missing. Yeah. We need talk shows where people throw chairs at each other again.
Yeah, but Roy Innes was a phony and always has been, and so was
all those shows were weird. Son, Niger.
But it's so funny because there was a guy, a black dude, one of these black conservative types at the time, who came to Giuliani's defense as well as Roy Innes's defense for bringing Bob Grant on. His name was Michael Myers. He's still around, but he decided he wrote something for the New York Post called the King Day Snubfest. Rudy Giuliani is making a fuss about the Baptist Ministers Conference's decision to exclude him from the King Day celebration. And Roy Innes of the Congress of Racial Equality has ignited a firestorm by inviting WOR Radio, at the time Bob Grant got kicked off of ABC and now was on WOR, to his King dinner. Grant, who has slammed Martin Luther King Jr. as a communist sympathizer and philanderer. The mayor shouldn't complain because the exclusion spared him another chorus of boos from those who hate his policies about police brutality, workfare, open admissions, and affirmative action. We didn't even get into all of the other stuff yet. Would have only scolded him for not following the King dream. Instead, Giuliani tried to Trump the Baptist by pointing out that King was inclusive. And then Michael Myers decides to go after Martin Luther King. Grant, who despises King, has assailed him correctly as a troublemaker rather than a healer. King did indeed practice confrontation, sit-ins, consumer boycotts, and labor stoppages that sent him and his followers to jail. His band of lawbreakers were blacks and whites and Jews and Gentiles, Democrats and Republicans, young and old. This wasn't inclusion. It was massive civil disobedience and direct action against the color line and racial terrors. In those years, to walk with King was a trial by fire. So that's the kind of world we were living in at the time. That was Giuliani's world. So here's the fun part. The following year, while he was running for Senate and all that, Al Sharpton invited Hillary Clinton to the King's Day celebration that the National Action Networks was putting together. Cor invited Giuliani to theirs. But sitting on the dais with him was an Austrian fascist by the name of Jörg Haider, who was at the time, I believe, was the president of Austria. He's dead now. He got in a car accident.
Isn't he the Holocaust denier?
Yes, that guy. That guy. So we're sitting there going, all right, you guys are just giving us everything you can to shoot at us and to shoot it at you rather. And of course, there was a whole bunch of people trying to defend Giuliani in the years that followed. I mean, there was Rudy is no racist. That basically tried to push back on something that Reverend Calvin Butts has said about him of the Assyrian Baptist Church. And it wasn't working. It wasn't working. The only thing that saved Giuliani's legacy was September 11th when he really did a good job. That was the only time he really did a good job.
Yeah, he was just there.
Yeah, it was the except the rule, right? I mean, but yeah. Like, what could he? I ended up getting criticized by him. He told them all that it was safe to go down there.
Yeah.
I think there was, I mean, she had kind of a militant, mindless police. And there is a point where that's kind of efficient. And sometimes that plays out. I don't know that 9/11, I wouldn't give him, I don't think his legacy was good with that either. I mean, ultimately. He stuck around too long. He's a lesson and go out on a high note. He should have retired right after September 11th, about September 15th or so. He should have been like, peace, I got a headache or something.
He was man of the year. He was Time's man of the year in 2001.
Yeah, we have that picture.
Hung around too long, man. Look what happened. He's a gremlin.
There it is.
Yeah, but see, that's the thing about Giuliani. And
And
he went on to just run for president. Now, the curious thing about him as he went along for the next 20 years or so is that I always found it interesting how no one would talk about his tenure as mayor except he was nice to gay people.
And 9/11. And gay people.
And 9/11,
Times Square.
The LGBTQ community. And the only thing that should hurt him is him being a divorcee. They would not talk about what he did to the community. No, and matter of fact, if it came up, it seemed almost like a conscious effort. Because I remember when Tavis Smiley kind of made some sort of allusion to it when someone said something to the effect about black and white with Giuliani. It had nothing to do with the racism that he was about. But it was kind of like you could tell that it was really being avoided. And when Obama became president, that seemed to just come back for Rudy, you know? Yeah. And he just kept on going after Obama for various things. I mean, his birth certificate, I mean, being a community organizer, whatever got the bigots riled up again.
I have a quote.
I
have a quote. After Obama was elected, Rudy Giuliani was speaking with a bunch of old business leaders or old white men. And he was quoted as saying that Obama, quote, doesn't love America and doesn't love us. Yeah. And I always say, like, Barack
Obama, I remember that.
In the United States, he was raised by his white mom and his white grandparents in a white neighborhood. I'm sure he's racist. I'm not taking that away. But his whole life was mapped out for him. There's this that Barack Obama is some radical. He's not going to overturn the system that allowed him to become president. right? I tell my students the first red flag to tell somebody, to tell if somebody knows what they're talking about, is if they call Barack Obama a communist. That immediate red flag, that's an immediate sign that you're dealing with somebody who doesn't know what the hell they're talking about. But I just with Obama, it just the racism that he faced was so ridiculous because they really did themselves into thinking that he was Malcolm X or you know, whoever.
Well, I mean, it's like what people said about Obama when he first came about, is that it is what it is. I mean, we wasn't expecting the second coming, despite what the right would say. Mm-hmm. But it was really interesting when Obama talked, how in at least one case, Giuliani changed his words around. And around 2014, after Eric Garner was murdered, Obama made some remark during a speech where he said that it's generally expected that poorer communities are going to be more policed. You're going to see more police in poorer communities. Now, people will probably get upset with that already. Yeah, I get that. But then just two days later, Giuliani was on CNN talking about, Barack Obama agrees with me that minority communities need to be policed more. Remember, Obama said poorer, Giuliani said minority.
Yeah.
So that was where I said, yeah, he's definitely on this shit. So here's the thing. Here's the main thing that, and the reason why I want to talk about this now, aside from the fact that, I went to a White Lives Matter rally in New York and there was nothing there, but there's a long story in behind that. We were going to talk about that, but we're already running long as it is. But the main reason why, yes, indeedy. Bless your hearts and
Antifa. They just fell into a whole bunch of traps and then wind up accomplishing nothing. Well done.
But the cute thing about everything is that, Giuliani, Bob Grant, the New York Post, I would disagree with him being centrist. He definitely was not centrist. And that was one of the reasons why we had to have this show. He was definitely not a centrist.
The myth is, it's
about him.
Yeah. And that, it's like and McCain. It's
my remark. Yeah. But this is what brings me to the point. Giuliani, Bob Grant, who endorsed Jared Taylor's book at the time, Paid for Good Intentions, and hyped that up, 77 WABC, the New York Post, all of them created the situations in New York that was more or less, I keep on saying, the petri dish for the alt-right. The alt-right really found a home in Giuliani's world. You know, yeah. I mean, a lot of the things that you see coming from the so-called alt-right, and it's very familiar to me. It's very familiar to me. Up to and including right wing is storming the Capitol. In this case, it was storming City Hall. So
yeah,
in 1992. So I mean, I even see the same people in play. I mean, you know, it's like including Giuliani. So Bob Grant is rotting in hell now. He died in 2013, 2014. I mean, we should do a story about him. Talk about how bad he was at some point.
Let's do it.
Yeah. Oh, he's tearing me up all the dead assholes you're talking about. I'm in a better mood now. I was in
the dead asshole episode.
Yeah, we'll do it. All right,
this is our dead. It's always nice to hear that Bob Grant's dead. It's just nice to hear it. You know,
always makes me listen. He hung out. He was from Woodbridge.
He was living in Woodbridge.
And he's dead.
New Jersey.
Ha ha ha.
but in any case, a lot of what we are fighting really got its what we're fighting here today nationally really got its start in New York City. Who was president last time around? Giuliani's friend.
Yeah. So I think that's the biggest lesson. Trump. Yeah, I listened to Rudy's podcast, and it's out there. It's called Common Sense.
Which is an insult.
Which is an insult to common sense, really.
Yeah, but it's also an insult to Thomas Paine, too.
Yeah, really.
Well, mean, that's enough. But so Rudy, I mean, but Rudy, so what I guess why this is important and why I'm glad, you know, you brought this up and you did this show today is because we talked a lot about like these deplatforming. Facebook is watching the political speech. Now we know that a lot of people are getting banned from Twitter and you see these little warnings all over the place now. And okay, fine. But I listened to his most recent, you know, a couple of recent episodes. And first off, I would like to say that, you know, the man's a gremlin. And I'm pretty sure that before he got into politics, he was one of the extras in that fucking movie. Because, I mean, not only does he look like one, but he sounds like he, like when they made those little noises and shit, it does sound like that he's, they've evolved into having some form of speech. And Rudy is, has, you know, clearly genetics related to the gremlins. That's obvious. But yeah. I mean, also like the things he's playing on. So we talked about how, okay, great, we've deplatformed them, but that could potentially make people make them more dangerous. They're going to go into these other platforms. They're on encrypted chats and they're using these other mediums. And one of them is podcasting. You know, there's a battleground here in our medium. Rudy during his podcast is continuing to throw out dog whistles about the election being stolen, suggesting that, Joe Biden become president, but, we still don't know how that happened, throwing out little comments. I mean, these are recent. I'm talking like within the last couple of weeks podcast.
He's just a racist. He's a big time asshole. Like he's a sexist. I mean, he doesn't know how to talk. I mean, he's just this, like,
he's still spreading.
You look back at these leaders. We put these people on these pedestals thinking that they're brilliant or that they're these thinking brilliant thinkers. And it's like Giuliani's this old man who we see melting on television. And I have to comment that the dish he does isn't here in the United States. He actually gets paid to travel around the world, the so-called security expert. This is the guy who didn't secure the World Trade Center after the first bombing. Right. This is the guy who goes to Latin America, who goes to Eastern Europe, who basically tells people crack skulls. That's Rudy Giuliani's contribution to law and order, cracking skulls. His damage is not just here in the United States. His damage is international.
And we have seen that. We saw that when we were talking about the Civil Rights South. We're talking about Frank Rizzo in Philadelphia. We're talking about the Dailies in Chicago, and we're talking about Giuliani. And quite frankly, that's not going to fly anymore. Giuliani was the last straw on that one, to be honest. But this police are still being, but the police out there are still being allowed to do whatever the hell they want to do, and that's one of the reasons why people are out in the streets today. And sometimes they're not peaceful. People are going to be out there saying, "We're burning down buildings," but they're killing them.
And while the mainstream media is kind of ignoring what's going on, and I guess I understand that, he's still constantly mentioning sex offenders coming over the borders and political elites involved in sex trafficking. And who do you think he's playing to when he talks about those things?
Yeah. Well,
they're still doing outreach to QAnon. They're still out there rallying their base.
Lunatics.
That's what they're getting ready for.
Well, see, that's the thing. The beauty about now is that the Giuliani that everybody knows is a laughing stock now. Mm-hmm. The Giuliani that everybody knows is a laughing stock. We talked about the Giuliani that they don't want us to talk about. And that video that I showed of the police riot, that came from a documentary that was done in 2005 called Giuliani Time. Look for it. It is on YouTube. And it will give you the entire rundown of how bad Giuliani was as mayor. Really a powerful documentary. And it's definitely something that everybody needs to have right there on standby every time they want to, every time Giuliani comes up and says, well, what about this? Because he does need to be, if he's going to be out there, he does have to answer for some of the crap that he is responsible for from back in the 90s and 2000, early 2000s. So main reason why I want to do this is because it's time that he starts being held accountable for that crap, because he really wasn't. And it's really high time that he is. So, and like I said, we were running long. It's like 15 after. Brian, what you got coming?
Hey, man, tune in tomorrow night, NJRR Live, 8 p.m. every Wednesday, like we do Tuesdays here for the Idavox Report on Revolution Radio Network. We do Wednesday nights, NJRR Live. Chris is going to be hanging out with me. We're going to do we're going to go around the globe, man. So we do a lot of grassroots activism. We always focus on people in the trenches doing that hard work. This week, we're going to talk about a lot of peace activism, relations with China. We're going to have an expert on China relations and our good friend Baman Azad, who came over to here as an Iranian immigrant, also spends a lot of time and energy concerned with South American issues. So it's going to be a really good panel as we talk about like kind of what I know I had my good radio groove going. I screwed it up. That's right. We edit. but it's going to be a really great panel. I'm excited about it. I love when Baman comes in. He's one of the nicest guys in the world, and he's really, really smart when it comes to international shit. So we're going to hang out and have a good time. Tune in tomorrow night, 8 p.m., right here where you're watching the Idavox Report. Same place.
And next week, we looks like we're going to be talking about Minnesota.
No, I think man.
I think because that's going to be around the time that the verdict comes down. We don't know if it's going to come down by Tuesday. It might even happen on Tuesday. But
it depends on where and when we're at. But we may break in. I mean, if you're around, man,
we'll see what happens. But I do know that whatever is happening next week is going to involve Minnesota.
Yeah.
I mean, hopefully I can get somebody from Minnesota to come on the show. I'm crossing my fingers on that one.
I mean, it's going to be a hotbed. Like, we got to see what's. Yeah. It's scary.
It's hard to get a hold of them. So busy working in the streets. They really are there's a lot of dedicated organizers in that area. You know, committed to social justice. And I'll tell you that they'll blow my ass off to get to go do the work. And it's hard to get a contact out of there. But you know, if they're listening, hit me up if you got an hour. We'll pre-record, we'll work around your schedule. I know that they're working hard over there, but you know, I'd love to have them on.
And by the way, these so-called independent journalists are getting called out on Twitter. That BGO online, that BG online thing.
Mm,
they do not like them. There's a bunch. I mean, we saw a lot of their videos from last summer and also during the insurrection. They're basically right-wingers who are passing themselves off as just independent journalists and they're acting like they don't have a side. And
these are the people that go on like Tim Pool's radio show and then, throw up their hands and try to do the false equivalencies. Yeah.
Yeah. So people are getting sick of them and we're probably going to be talking about them as well. Hopefully I'll have somebody from Minneapolis, St. Paul, someplace, maybe even Brooklyn Center, somebody from Minnesota. I just got to see if there's anybody available. If not, we are still going to talk about Minnesota. And unfortunately, that means that we can't talk about anything else that's happening on 420. So, hey, that's also Adolf Hitler's birthday. So,
yeah, it's my buddy's birthday.
So I would love to have been talking about Nazis, but hey, we probably still will.
Yeah, this is the anti-fascist show. We'll talk about fascists on this show.
Yeah, if we're talking about cops, we're talking about fascism. So, hey. All right, y'all.
Wait, Darryl, if you don't mind, I just got a quick plug for our listeners really quick. I'm going to be teaching a class next Monday, only 2 hours long. It's Brookdale Community College. It's a long learning course. It's 2 hours long. It's from 6 p.m. to 8:30 p.m., Monday, April 19th. The cost is $19, and the lecture is called Exploring QAnon and Antifa. We've treated them as false equivalencies. We have a society that wants to treat them both as equals. That's not the case. One, it is rooted in fighting fascism. The other one is in chasing mythological fantasy bad guys. All right. Antifa real, QAnon is a joke. So if you get a chance, check it out. Life Learning at Brookdale. Google Lifelong Learning. I got the link there. If Leah could, it's Exploring QAnon and Antifa next month, April 9th, 6:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m., $19.
Excellent. By all means, check it out. So we're out of here. You know what? Because we are dealing with some bad cops this week and next week, Brian, can you send your special message to the police?
Oh, of course. And for everybody should know that the police, they can quit their jobs.
Peace, y'all.